Welcome to City of God, a podcast of the Center for Public Theology at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Dr. Owen Strand, and I'll be your host. Join us each week as we engage the city of man with the biblical wisdom of the city of God.
What's the best book you read this past year? What book ranks as that which is, in your mind, award-winning? Well, here at the Center for Public Theology, as we wrap up 2016, we wanted to break down our books of the year in not one, but two special end-of-the-year podcasts. Today, then, we're going to talk about my three favorite books that I read in 2016. And then in our next podcast, as I say, just as 2016 comes to a close, we'll talk about honorable mention books. So I know that a good number of you right now are sitting on the edge of your seat, liable to fall off at any second as you await this news. In all seriousness, 2016 was a rich year for books. My book of the year has to go to Paul Kalanithi's book, When Breath Becomes Air. I read this book this past year. This book, of course, is the story of the young Stanford University physician, Paul Kalanithi, who contracted cancer not long ago and then actually passed away recently. So the book is completed, in point of fact, by Paul's widow, Lucy. When Breath Becomes Air is the story of a young man who has risen in his life and his career to spectacular heights. He has become the successful doctor he, for a very long time, wanted to be. He has reached something close to the height of his profession in his mid-30s. But then out of the blue, Paul is struck, as I say, with cancer. And he decides, even as his body is breaking down and he is going through intensive chemotherapy, he decides to write a book chronicling his journey with this illness and telling others his story about how he has come to terms with his mortality. We did a podcast on this book earlier, and it struck me that When Breath Becomes Air is a rare journey into a confrontation with mortality. I say rare because American culture in this day and age does not want to focus and spend much time on death. That can be seen as dwelling on negative things, on even being a hater towards oneself and one's life. But Kalanithi's elegiac book, powerful, moving memoir that, as I said, is ultimately completed by his loving wife, possesses a rare power to cause us to look squarely at the human condition, at the last enemy, death, and for Christians causes us to think hard about the shape of our lives, to take stock of what we are valuing with the years, with the limited time that we have, and to give thanks, to give profound thanks that life after death is not a question mark. In truth, we are walking into, stepping into eternity the moment that we take our last breath. So life is not ending for the believer, for the one who knows Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Life is only beginning. I don't know precisely what views Kalanithi held about Christ and about God and Christianity. He has some discussion of Christian things in his book, and he is clearly a deep-thinking, thoughtful, eloquent man. It's obviously my strong hope that he did come to know Christ as his Savior before his life ended, though I don't know whether that took place. But I can say this, When Breath Becomes Air is a uniquely beautiful book. I term it the book of the year because it emotionally affected me like no other book I read. In point of fact, it left me a shambles by its end, even as Kalanithi, just before he passes away, calls for his infant child to be put in his arms. It is a scene, I think, unlike any I have read in nonfiction literature. So I encourage you, by all means, to read this book, to engage it, to think about death, even if you are in ministry and leadership. to use it not simply with yourself, but with others to begin a conversation about ultimate things, about ultimate reality, and about ultimate salvation. For our second major book that we should recognize, not our book of the year here at the Center for Public Theology, sorry, Tom, but we have to give plaudits to Tom Wolfe's The Kingdom of Speech. We did a podcast on this one as well, and I returned to it because it left a mark on me. I didn't simply record a podcast on Wolfe's short book on evolutionary thought and essentially the history of evolutionary thought in the last 200 years, and especially its role, in magisterial role, you could say, in American culture and society today. I recognized that though I had read it some months ago, it still was sticking with me, and it had many profound insights. One of the quotes from the book that has stuck out in my mind is this: to say that animals evolved into man, Tom Wolfe says, is like saying that Carrara marble evolved into Michelangelo's David. Now that is a strong denunciation of the idea that evolutionary theory explains the world, the way the world has taken its shape and form. As I said some months ago, I don't know exactly where Wolfe stands on these matters. My friend Jared Wilson and I were discussing the book not long ago, and he was saying that he really wanted to know what exactly it was if evolutionary theory doesn't offer us the kind of theory to explain everything, what exactly it is that does explain everything. And I thoroughly agree with my friend and colleague here at Midwestern Seminary, Jared Wilson, because you do have to kind of fill this in even as you read The Kingdom of Speech. You have to supply your own theory of everything, so to speak, in order to make sense of reality. But here's the thing. We have rarely received a sharper, more pointed, and more succinct critique of the ruling concept of American and Western intellectual life than this one. So you should pick up, to be sure, The Kingdom of Speech. It's typical Tom Wolfe. It's not just intellectually rich. The prose dances. It moves you along in its compelling, unique narrative, and ultimately will leave you howling at points and also thankful for such a thoughtful skewering of this sainted concept in our time. The third book I'd like to mention, and this will be my final one today, is this: Roger Scruton's Fools, Frauds, and Firebrands. Roger Scruton's Fools, Frauds, and Firebrands. This is a book that I read some months ago. In point of fact, it came out at the end of 2015, but I read it in 2016. So if you think that I am now disqualified from speaking, I'm sorry, I will continue. Scruton's book is essentially a critique of leading leftist, we could say progressive thinkers of the last 100 years or so. If you have not started reading Roger Scruton, you should know this. He is a brilliant British philosopher who has actually not had the kind of career that he could have. In other words, he has not had a chair at Cambridge or Oxford for the last 30, 40 years, as he no doubt deserves. Instead, because of his very strong conservative inclinations and convictions, Scruton has held a variety of appointments. He has, in fact, taught in the British Academy, but he's edited journals, he's written books for a living, he speaks regularly. And so Scruton is this fascinating figure who, as I say, can definitely hang with the Oxford Dons, the Cambridge Dons, but nonetheless has carved out a different path. And I would encourage all readers who enjoy thinking through Western intellectual life, who have some kind of stomach for philosophy, even just a growing one, to encounter Scruton, begin reading him, begin working through his books. Fools, Frauds, and Firebrands is a good book to start with, although you will see right off the bat that Scruton isn't intellectual. He is an intellectual heavyweight, excuse me. You could also read his autobiography from a few years back, Gentle Regrets, if you want a slightly easier entry into Scruton's writings. But either way, I strongly encourage readers to consider Scruton's writings and give them wide and ongoing engagement. Both Wolfe and Scruton are, in point of fact, intellectual contrarians of a kind. This is not to say that they are the same kind, because they would not receive that designation. I don't think either one of them. But nonetheless, these are thinkers who have taught me crucial ideas and have emboldened me and many, many others. I'm just a tiny slice, of course, of those who appreciate these men, but have emboldened many, many others to see that there is no shame in not receiving received wisdom of our time. In point of fact, it's a very good idea to think freely, to use one's mind, and to think for oneself by judging all the facts and considering all the opinions. So, with that, you have the Center for Public Theology's three top books of the year: Paul Kalanithi, When Breath Becomes Air; Tom Wolfe, The Kingdom of Speech; Roger Scruton, Fools, Frauds, and Firebrands. And I will say this in conclusion: he is no fool who gives substantial portions of his time to read books just like these. Happy reading.
Thanks for listening to City of God, a podcast at the Center for Public Theology at Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. We're so thankful you stopped by. We encourage you to continue to join the conversation at cpt.mbts.edu, the official website of the center. And we encourage you to follow us on Twitter and Facebook as well. Join us in coming days as we continue the conversation on what it means to be the city of God in the city of man.